Encuentro Radio es periodismo, derechos, igualdad, dignidad, mujeres, inclusión, masculinidad, arte, expresión, libertad, esperanza, cultura, ecumenismo, literatura, historia y análisis. Pero en realidad somos una gran familia. Bienvenidos y bienvenidas a Encuentro Radio. ¿Te perdiste tu programa favorito? No te preocupes, en Encuentro Radio subimos todos nuestros programas en versión de podcast. Encuéntralos en www.encuentroradio.co y disfruta de todo el contenido que tenemos preparado para ti. Encuentro Radio. Comunícate con nosotros a través de nuestro WhatsApp 302-521-2342.
From Colombia,
the Philippines,
the United States,
Germany,
Kenya,
Austria.
We are bringing our voices together to reflect on gender and social justice.
A multicultural look in the mirror at our society.
Welcome to Mirror Voices.
Wednesdays at 2 p.m. Colombian time.
Brought to you by CEPALC and Encuentro Radio.
Can you hear me?
Te regalo la primera planta que en mi vida yo sembré en la tierra. Te regalo el cofrecito que antes de morir me regaló la abuela. Te regalo la emoción que sentí al ver nacer a mi primer hermano. La sonrisa de mamá al verme deletrear y mis primeros pasos. Mi primer amor de infancia y mis primeros zapatos. Mi primera travesura y el desorden de mi cuarto. Mi primer amor de infancia y mis primeros zapatos. Mi primera travesura y el desorden de mi cuarto. Mi primer día de colegio, mi peinado, mi primer cuaderno. Mis amigos de secundaria, mi pasado, todo eso. Mi primer día de colegio, mi peinado, mi primer cuaderno. Mis amigos de secundaria, mi pasado, todo eso. De luna llena y los aguaceros cuando ya es invierno. Nuestras fiestas patronales a ver los arrullos en cada diciembre. Y juntos en año nuevo tratar de cumplir los sueños que se tienen. La experiencia de mis viejos y el dolor de sus ancestros. Los poderes de sus dioses, Dios y sus anhelos. La experiencia de mis viejos y el dolor de mis ancestros. Los poderes de sus dioses, sus odios y sus anhelos. Mi futuro, mi voz, mi aliento, solo quiero ponerlo en tus manos. Y a medida que pase el tiempo, tú comprendas que te amo. Mi primer día de colegio, mi peinado, mi primer cuaderno, mis amigos de secundaria, mi pasado, todo.
welcome to another episode of Mirrored Voices here on Encuentro Radio, the radio station from CEPALC here in Colombia. Nice to be back with everyone. I wasn't able to be here last week. My name is Hannah, and I was helping out with some CEPALC workshops. And I'm joined today once again by the lovely ladies here, Michelle and Phoebe. How are you both? Tell me about your week. Last week, I missed a lot. I was, like, off the grid for for the whole week.
It was Mariana and I last week, and that was a lot of fun. We were talking about democracy. We were talking about that 2024 is the biggest year for democracy in the history of the world, and how, unfortunately, that's not always a good news story for women, and how we have been ostracized from politics, both as the electorate and as representatives. So it was very interesting, and if anyone wants to listen back, then you can do, I believe so.
You can find it on encuentroradio.com.co.
Cheeky self-plug.
And you can find, as you may have heard in the intro, all of the programs here on Encuentro Radio are recorded and then uploaded later, so you can listen to it. We love when people listen live and can participate in the conversation and can send us their messages. But if you can't, you can always find us online and listen. Nice. And Michelle, how was your week? How are you doing?
Well, my week was somewhat crazy.
Oh, boy. Crazy good or crazy bad?
Well, it was a mixture of everything, really. I mean, I had to go to immigration to sort out my cédulas, like a foreign ID. And just as I was this close to, like, finishing the whole process, the lady there asked me, what is your blood type? And then I didn't know, and I forgot that what I written on the form. And then she was like, no, señorita, tienes que regresar. Yeah, you have to come back with a form that shows what your blood type is, which is something that is not, like, normal in my country. Like, we don't have that on the birth certificate or the ID or the license. So I'm pretty sure 80% of the country doesn't know what their blood type is. So, I mean, it was a bit frustrating, but I'm happy that I'm done with that. I'm going to collect my cédula tomorrow. And also, I was also happy that, hey, now I know that I'm O positive.
I'm O positive, too.
That is cool.
You need it.
What is your blood type?
All right, well, me and my A positive blood are just going to wait over here. That's true. I forgot that that's, and they don't, I don't think even on the list of, like, documents you need and requirements, I don't think they mention anything about, having to know what your blood type is. In Colombia, it's like everybody knows their blood type.
That is true.
And even on, like, if you notice on police uniforms or things, they will usually have a patch. Most of them say O positive, because I think it's one of the most common blood types. And if you're in, like, a taxi, the card, the, like, driver information will have their blood type. It's, you know, all of the cellula, your ID, everything has, you know, your blood type. I guess in case of emergency, you know, it's good for the hospital to be able to see.
That's so different.
What type, like, of blood you are.
In the UK, we never find out. I only found out because I give blood. And then they tell you when you get a little sticker. I'm glad I'm not in your shoes.
And that was not the worst of it all. When I had to go to check the test, I thought it was just going to be a prick. Unfortunately, they had to, like, locate my vein. It was so terrible. It had to be done. And, well, I'm happy that at least now I know. Yeah.
I think I was similar. My mom knew, so I heard her mention before. But then I gave blood at the end of high school. There was, like, a blood drive, and if you were over 18, you could, you know, donate blood or whatever. And I remember getting the little thing. I was like, oh, I guess I am A positive. Okay. Which was fortunate to, like, have that then when I was applying for the cellula.
You already knew. Yeah. Well, what... surprised me was how quick they were to like to give me the information about where I could go and get the test.
Okay.
That clearly showed that it's like a big problem with that with us foreigners. Like not many of us know what our blood type is.
Yeah.
But there is a blood type that everyone can have, right? I can't remember what it is, but there's one of them that is
I think
compatible.
I think O negative is the universal donor.
Mm-hmm.
And then I'm not sure which one is the, maybe O positive is the, I don't quite remember. There's a universal donor that can get, that like anybody can receive that kind of blood.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's also like a universal receiver. So there's certain blood types that like can accept pretty much anything. And then there are the rare blood types that are really difficult to match with.
Mm-hmm.
So if like someone with a rare blood type needs surgery, that can be a big issue. And actually, I remember with Michelle when we were doing one of the many times that you've had to go to the migration office, and myself as well, and they like paused everything to make a little announcement about a blood drive, about anybody who wants to donate blood, and it was like in the middle of the appointment, like gathering everybody who works there, and somebody from the like health ministry was talking about like, oh, we're doing a blood drive, anyone can participate. Do you want to give blood? Why not? Do you want to give blood? It was a little funny. Intense.
Yeah.
And we are here also today with Mariana. Hello, how are you?
Hello, I'm tired. Hey, Ryan.
Yes.
Because the bus was so slow when it's coming here, but it's okay. And I'm sad because it's sunny outside. No, I prefer cold weather. My jacket, it's so big because I believe, like, continue raining, it's Bogota, we don't know, but right now it's sunny, so I'm not so happy right now.
It has been rainy the past couple of days.
Which
is good because we need water in the city.
Yeah, that is true.
I guess for me it's more good. I like more when it's raining, when it's cold, more than sunny.
Crazy.
No, it's not, because my head, it's not available with the sun, because right now I feel pain in my head, and I just be like 5 minutes in the sun.
You need a hat.
No, I guess it's for a lot of light. My eyes start hard, and later my head, and later I need to be in my home and not look any light because I have migraine. So that's why other reason that I don't like the sun, because it's so difficult for me.
Yep.
I'm sorry, baby.
Okay. Well, I don't like it because there's so much sun in my country, so I'm happy to be here. Even if it rains every day, give me rain any time of the day, I'm good.
I think that's the opposite reason why I'm like, oh my gosh, it's sunny, it's so nice, and I can walk around with my arms covered rather than walking around with like 50 different layers on and trying to stay warm.
So last week, I thought I would share a little bit briefly about the Sepulch workshops in the META department of Colombia. So me and Alejandra and Jessie were on a trip last week to a couple communities of former FARC members. So these are people who signed the peace accord and, you know, laid down weapons and kind of rebuilt communities in a peaceful way and committed to peace in the country. It's very complicated because there's also a lot of these regions are very remote, very isolated, and feel very much like abandoned by the state. So there's always a concern of like, well, is the government really holding up their end of the bargain? And then there are, you know, concerns about dissident groups. So people who were not in agreement with the signing of the peace deal and then threaten the groups that did sign the peace deal. So one of the communities that Sepulch had worked with in the past had to, for example, leave their land. They had to abandon everything they had worked to set up because they were being threatened by the dissident groups who were not happy that they signed the peace deal. So it's a complicated region, but the people there are very friendly, very nice, very committed to rebuilding life for themselves and for their kids. And so we go and work in La Pista, La Primavera, and we were visiting Espelda, another region nearby, to help work with women and with children especially. So Alejandra and I were working especially with the women from these communities. Some of them are former guerrilla members, and some of them are family members of former fighters. And we talked about kind of mental health and balance, especially this like idea of balance, of we can't, you know, get rid of all of the bad things in life. Bad things happen in life. Mm-hmm. Difficult things happen in life. But learning to see life more as like a balance, like everything has a time. There's a time for every season. Mm-hmm. And thinking of, you know, what are the things that are that weigh heavy on us, like responsibilities. Often motherhood, you know, is seen as like a blessing and something beautiful, but I don't think we should deny that it is difficult and it is a lot of responsibility that falls overwhelmingly on women. Expectations of other people, expectations for ourselves, this like responsibility of not wanting to let people down. So all of these things that kind of weigh heavy on us. And then balancing out, and we did like an activity where people held out their arms like a scale, trying to balance things as we kind of placed rocks or pebbles in their hands, and they could start to feel the weight, as well as positive things, joyful things, being, you know, part of your community or seeing, you know, your children grow, or the pride you feel when you think about how much you've grown in life. So kind of this reflection on the good and the bad in life, a little almost meditation as well, because a lot of these women are always busy, always busy taking care of other people especially, that they don't necessarily have a moment for themselves to like close their eyes and just be present and think about their life, and to be present with other women, and to be able to talk. And so it was pretty meaningful for a lot of them, and a lot of the women talk about how these workshops give them an opportunity to meet together and just like share between women that they don't that they can do on their own, but they often don't, or they kind of overlook the importance of having that space with other women to share and to talk and not necessarily have their kids around and like climbing all over them. So we usually do like the women's workshop, and then Jasit was, you know, doing activities with the kids. Mm-hmm. So that the moms have kind of a space. And I say moms because really I don't know of any of the women in these communities that are not mothers. They're all mothers. Mm-hmm. So talking a little bit about, you know, the responsibility of that, and how to take care of themselves, and find balance in life, hopefully was helpful to them. They seem to enjoy it. A little bit different from some of the things that we usually do. And then there's a woman who's from the Primavera community who moved to Espelda, which is nearby. I mean, on a motorcycle, you know, a couple, maybe 10, 15, 20 minutes or so. And she helped connect Sapalk to the women's committee in that community, mm-hmm. Which I think a lot of Sapalk programs, we reach new areas because somebody who has had the opportunity to participate in these programs reaches a new area, and they want to connect more people to have the same opportunities that they did. So I think that's really speaks highly of of the experience, mm-hmm. To help connect Sapalk to new regions, to want more women to experience these workshops, and to share that space together. So hopefully that will continue. Tomorrow I'm leaving again to go with Danielle to Boyacá, which is a different department in Colombia. And we won't be going to the Sogamoso region, which is where we usually go, but to a new region, again, through a connection of someone who had participated in Sapalk's programs, to be working with near the Emerald Mines region. Colombia is like the main export of emeralds in the world. Mm-hmm. Most emeralds come from Colombia, but those mining conditions can be very dangerous. Yep. For people So we'll be visiting that region and see what kind of work we can do, what kind of activities we can do with some of the young people there. And so next week, I'll tell you all about that and how that went.
Yeah.
Wow, it sounds like you've had a very busy but productive week.
Yes. Very busy in this region in Meta. It's very, like, off the grid. Like, if you want internet, you can buy, like, a pin for the internet, but you have to kind of stay close to where that little hub is. So I would buy, like, an hour or two a day and be able to connect. Keep my Duolingo streak. I'm very proud of that. And maybe
that's
like
so good.
Answer some messages, and then that's it.
Did you enjoy that? Was it refreshing, or were you like, oh my gosh, I wish I had Netflix right now?
It's kind of both. Mm-hmm. You know, there are some good things to like disconnecting, and there are some frustrating things about that as well, in terms of like logistics and trying to plan things when you may or may not have internet, and the person you're trying to talk to, especially in these communities, may or may not have internet, so it's always kind of like...
Yeah, it's difficult.
It's a little difficult. The hot weather, though, that gets me. I can't. It's hot, it's humid. It rained a lot by the end of the trip, which brought out the mosquitoes.
Ooh,
so I still have, like, some mosquito bites that are healing. and it's always... I mean, it's in nature, but you see, it makes me really sad to see so much garbage. Mm-hmm. These are, again, like remote regions of the country where there is no like organized trash collection. So, you know, in Bogota, we collect our, especially in our like apartment building, you just put it down the chute, and when the garbage truck comes, someone takes it out. And collects the garbage, or recycling as well. These things don't exist in certain parts of the country. And so there's, you know, the system to bring in, like, plastic and styrofoam and packaging, like bags of chips and bags of, you know, everything, the water. You can't really drink. I mean, maybe the people who live there can drink the tap water. But for those of us who aren't from that region, can't. So that requires buying plastic bottles of water every single day, multiple a day, because I dehydrate easily. And then people, like, burning their trash pretty close to their house as well, because that's, like, the only way to get rid of it.
Okay. Yeah.
So we see, I often talk with Angel, who is, like, the main person from Zapalk who usually travels there, about this, like, whose responsibility is that? Because we have, you know, these materials coming in and then no way to deal with them. No recycling system, no trash collection, no way of, like, dealing with these things that once they come in. So, I mean, I had one of my empty water bottles and put, you know, my little trash, my botella de amor, like putting the little plastic things in, and brought it back with me to Bogota because I collect those at home and I can bring them to places that can use them and can reuse those materials. But obviously people who live there, you know, don't necessarily have that option. So I was thinking about that a lot every time I go, because it's always sad to see, like, this place in the middle of nature, and then you see all this trash on the side of the road, or, you know, people just throw trash anywhere, because what difference does it make if it's in the garbage can, if it doesn't actually go anywhere? And especially meaningful since it was Earth Day not too long ago. But these are topics, obviously, that are important to think about all year long.
Yeah, I guess it's difficult to think of that, because if Zapalk not coming there, that people not know that they have rights. Mm-hmm. So it's like a lot of people here in Colombia not believe that there's part of Colombia that you don't have internet. Mm-hmm. Because it was a big project, like 2 or 3 years ago was like the idea, most for the pandemic, that a lot of people... like a far part of Colombia have internet, and in that moment, Robert the money.
So it's like, it's so difficult to believe that, that people trying to recycle on something like that, because you don't understand your rights, how you are going to set the right for the people and for the planet. It's difficult to understand that, because that people, with all the violation that the violence that we have in our country, it's so difficult that, that people have the opportunity to go to a school. Obviously, we are in Bogota, that it's the capital, so obviously there's a lot of people that not understand the idea for recycling, and you have the opportunity to go to a school, and you have the opportunity to have the information not so close to you, but you have a friend, you have someone. What happened with that people? That people not have anyone. So it's like, obviously it's difficult because they live in the nature, but if we continue believe that that people not have the opportunity to go to a school or have the opportunity to anything more than CEPAL give the information for the right, it's more difficult that that people is going to be like trying to think of the planet, because for that people it's more important. I need work because I need to give food for my family. Mm. Right now I'm not worried about like recycling something like that. That's something that happened. A lot of people like is saying, what the factories continue with water? Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's difficult taking the water for the factories because there's a lot of people that just receive the money for that factory. Mm-hmm. If that factory don't have water and can work, how is the people mm-hmm. gonna give food for the family? So it's a situation that it's difficult to understand. And I guess, obviously, it's important if that people have the opportunity to try to understand about recycling. Mm-hmm. But it's like, for them, the most important thing is trying to give food for the family and no more.
I mean, I think that's an interesting conversation about the value of internet as well. Because mm-hmm. I believe that there are some discussions, particularly in the UN, about making access to the internet maybe not a basic human right, but something that is much more widely encouraged and mm-hmm. give governments and those in power responsibility to give those who don't have access to internet the access to the internet, because the reality is that this is the way the world is moving forward, and not only is it just about having access to the internet but having the ability to use it and mm-hmm. to have, like, I don't know, Excel skills, which I do not have and I'm kind of worried about it.
Me too.
But it's a really, I think it's a really interesting point about the fact that things like the internet mm-hmm. maybe an antiquated viewpoint is that it's a luxury that not everyone needs, but I feel like the reality is that it's a necessity that everyone needs, because it's where the world is, it's where education is, it's where access to work is, it's where access to culture and art mm-hmm. is, and the fact yeah. that people don't have internet is obviously not their fault, but I think it's again another way that you can ostracize those who are already at the margins, and mm-hmm. it's a really interesting conversation that they're having kind of in the high up places of the world.
Yeah, it's yeah. access to information,
mm. yeah,
which everyone should have mm-hmm. because, you know, in order to make informed decisions, you need to have information. Mm-hmm. And the schooling there is very interesting and also very difficult, because each of the communities that we visit has an elementary school with, again, one teacher. This is common in many yeah. parts of Colombia, one teacher, grades 1 through 5, and they may
for
have
everyone.
They may have like 30 kids.
Yeah.
But after grade 5, the young people who continue to study have to leave town. Yeah. They have to go to basically a boarding school in the closest, I don't really even know if it's considered a city, but like the larger town.
Yeah.
And so they have to send their kids to like boarding school there, and then they might come back on the weekends. And with the way that the trips have been set up, all 3 times that I've been there, we were there during the week. So it's strange to go to like a town and see you have very small children mm-hmm. and you have their parents, and there are no young people, unless they are young mothers, mm-hmm. in which case they often, unfortunately, leave school, do not continue, and live with their parents, most likely, who will help raise their children. Mm. And so we're looking maybe at the possibility of changing that dynamic and yeah. maybe next time be able to go on a weekend or something and be able to kind of work with some of the young people there. But it is very, very strange to have to leave town just to continue your education. and have to go so far away. And they were talking about, well, if there are, like, behavioral issues or things, they obviously still have the right to an education, but things like the transportation to school, the housing to stay at school are considered privileges. So they can be taken away, which effectively, in my head, I was thinking, okay, so that, you know, you're not taking away their right to an education, but basically everything that they have access to that right can be taken away if they're, you know, misbehave or they act out or things like that. So the right to an education,
it's difficult.
It's difficult there.
Yeah, there's a movie called Los Colores de la Montaña that explains how it's for a kid trying to live about the war that we have here in Colombia, if you want to saw Los Colores de la Montaña, and there explain how it's so difficult to understand for a people like me that, like, live in the city. I just saw the war and the conflict in the news, and for Felix that he explained a lot of years ago, because when you really don't, like, you know that, you understand that the education here, it's so difficult. That's why there's a lot of people that say, I don't want to be a teacher. I'm studying for that, but I know if I'm not enter of the distrital education here in Bogota, it's going to be so difficult that I'm going to have a job. Because someone, if I go there, they can tell me, like, you need to go to Boyacá. But maybe I'm not have, like, the opportunity to have internet. So it's so difficult right now trying to, like, understand about the education in Colombia, because the indigenous people can be like teacher, but it's necessarily that you study in a university. It's not like just for you that you be part of a community. You can go there and trying to teach your own community. That's not available. You need to, like, go on university and have, like, all the career, and later, if you can, you can go. If not, maybe other person. Okay. It's difficult.
Why don't we go to a song from Herencia Timbiqui, our artist of the day.
Yeah.
And we'll be right back.
Yo quisiera volver al pasado y vivir esas cosas bonitas. Cosas que mi existencia marcaron y le dieron sentido a mi vida. Estudiar en el mismo colegio, conocer a los mismos amigos y con ellos forjar yo de nuevo los momentos amargos y lindos. Y volverme a escapar del paseos, los bailes, los abrazos y las carcajadas, buscar la protección de mis padres y darte un besito si estás enojada. Cerrar mis ojos para llamarte, que tu cuerpo sea siempre mi abrigo y volver a perder el examen que todos ganaron por estar contigo y volverme a escapar. Escribirte una carta de amor que solo tú podrás
Okay, we are listening Herencia de Timbiquí. That is a Colombian folk group found in 2000. In Cali, in Colombia, the group is a formation of 11 Colombian musicians, 5 of them from the region of Timbiquí in Cauca, which they use the instrument that is chonta, marimba, la marimba de chonta, los cununos y la tambora. This instrument is a traditional instrument for that song, for the song, the Caribe song of Colombia. And that's a big group that obviously they're using the traditional music for that part. So it's trying to continue, remember that the marimba de chonta is so important, continue using. But right now, I wanna say, Phoebe, hello, that if you wanna tell us about the Earth Day.
I will, yeah. I feel like this week is a little bit of a mismatch? Don't know. A mismatch of different topics, because it turns out that this week in April is a big week for lots of different things, especially because April the 22nd is Earth Day. So happy Earth Day, everybody. I hope you celebrated. And the theme this year is activists versus plastics and planets versus plastics. And the theme is to try and promote that by 2040, we reduce the production of plastic by 60%, which, when you look at how much plastic is used for everything, is a bit of a challenge, but it's obviously very important, because I think I heard recently on the news that there are even now fetuses being found with microplastics within their bodies. Mm-hmm. So clearly we are consuming plastic at a rate which is crazy, and it's because we're producing it, and plastic takes thousands of years to break down. So I think it's a really interesting conversation to have. But not only is it Earth Day, but this week there is a very interesting court case going on in the Inter-American Court. So nearly all the Latin American countries and a majority of Caribbean countries are part of this Inter-American Court. The United States and Canada are not part of this jurisdiction, but this court is a place where they discuss various laws, various challenges which are coming up, and it's a really good kind of way to do it, because it allows people who have lived experience and have a lot of expertise, who maybe wouldn't necessarily get their voices heard in other mediums, to have their say. And it was Colombia and Chile who brought this court case to the Inter-American Court, and it focuses on how countries have a responsibility to care for the environment as a human right, and about the fact that fossil fuel companies, the degradation of the environment is affecting people's day-to-day lives. And in this article that I have in front of me is a man from Colombia who is a fisherman, and talking about the reduction in how much fish is being produced, and therefore if they can't produce enough fish, they can't sell enough, and they're not going to make enough money. So I think it's a really interesting conversation about how this court is very influential in guiding governments in laws and in policy, which can directly help people. But it also talks about, and it's going to be looking at the intersection between other issues such as children's and women's rights, and other forms of social justice challenges, which the climate crisis is a part of. I'm very excited by this, because they're also talking about loss and damage. And loss and damage was a big theme of the COP26 event, which was in Glasgow 2-3 years ago. And it was about countries who have disproportionately caused the climate crisis, especially with carbon pollution.
Yeah.
And the how much they owe to countries who are being disproportionately affected by this. And loss and damage is not just about money, but it's about saying, we know that your country needs money to build the infrastructure, to survive, to help people literally rebuild their homes. And if your government didn't cause it, because again, a lot of these governments don't have so much wealth, then it should be richer countries who pay the price. And this is talking about a similar concept about towns and small areas where there is real loss and damage and they need money to be able to survive, and what governments and what companies owe to these people to be able to do that. And as we've mentioned today, we in Bogota are kind of feeling the effects of climate change. I wouldn't say we're quite on the front line in comparison to some countries and some communities in other parts of the global south. I think there's a drought in, I think in some part of Africa, there's a really, really bad drought and it's causing a famine. But we can see how important the effects of the environment are on how we live our lives. And yeah. So this court, this session, which is going to be held in various places in Brazil, in some Caribbean countries as well, is going to be looking at how the government and how companies can tackle this and can make good representation and try and do something about it. So, yeah, that is Earth Day. I hope you celebrate. And it's, again, we can all do our bit. I mean, I think there's a complicated relationship that I have between the responsibility of the individual and the responsibility mm-hmm. of those who have a lot of power. We can all make efforts to try and reduce our plastic consumption, try and refill water bottles rather than buying new ones every day. But at the same time, I think we can also try and hold our governments and big businesses to account, because really, it's those people who are going to make a massive difference, because in a lot of ways, similarly to how, Hannah, you were talking about the lack of recycling, the lack of responsible waste disposal in parts of Mesa, there's lots of things that are beyond our control. Mm-hmm. And really, if you can try and live as green a life as possible, but if those things, if those external factors aren't in your favour, then there's not a lot you can do. So happy Earth Day, everybody. There is hope. We can do something. But yeah, this is the way forward.
Mm. Yeah, I guess it's difficult because like artists like Taylor Swift, I don't have anything bad about the music. Mm. It's everything good. Mm-hmm. But that woman travels a lot. Oh my God. And that's a big problem because all the, I guess it's that saying in English, I'm not sure, CO2 that she produced mm-hmm. with that travel, that is hurting more the air mm-hmm. than like the trash. Mm-hmm. It's more difficult. And in Colombia, like something like happened, it's right now happening 24 years ago. And the idea for the president in that time was that here we call Laura Gaviria. So the idea is if you have to go to war at 9 a.m., you're not going the time 9 a.m., you are going to go at 8 a.m. That the idea, it's like 1 hour early because you can help to the light, you know? So obviously the problem with the water, it is the same. And Colombia, it's complicated because we have the opportunity to have like sun all the moment because the space in the world that we have, it's so good, but here we don't do that. But that idea, maybe it's going to happen because we need to try to take off the light if you know be in that part mm-hmm. because that it's continue consuming not just electricity, just water mm-hmm. because here we use water for the electric things. So it's difficult, I guess. I'm not sure if that's gonna happen, but I guess it's like so close that here in Bogota say that it's gonna go back the Gaviria hour.
I mean, the Taylor Swift thing really frustrates me because, again, there's so much evidence to show that it's the richest 1% who are causing most. I think there's some statistic about, like, the richest 1 or 10% are consuming or outputting more CO2 than, like, the rest of the 50% of the world, which is crazy. And loads of people are like, oh, yeah, but she has to because she has a job. But this is the point. If we want to look after our planet, we have to change the way that we live. And I would not say it's a necessity that Taylor Swift needs to do a show every night. Mm-hmm. If that's not going to be viable, then she has to change her ways. And I mean, Taylor Swift, I think, partly got some stick because of misogyny, and she was an easy victim.
Yeah, she's not the only one.
There's probably so many people who are using private jets, and a lot of the problem with private jets is not necessarily when people are using them, but the maneuvering of the planes between journeys, because they can't just stay on an airfield. So it frustrates me so much, but I think that's, again, where we have to hold people to account and say, actually, we can't continue living the way we live. Like, that's the point. We have to change. And
those people who have a lot of power and a lot of wealth also have to change. I have to be careful because it frustrates me so much.
Yeah, and it's difficult because the people with the power not believe in climate change. We obviously trying to teach about that, but it's so difficult that the people do that. Mm-hmm. Because for a lot of people trying to understand the importance of recycling, they said, like, but that's what's going to work for that, for the planet, but that's work. So it's trying to continue doing that. I do in my house. But, yeah, it's difficult trying to chain all the minds that the people take care about the planet.
And I'm going to go on my anti-consumerist rant, but the amount of consumption there is, you don't need... So I think fast fashion produces more CO2 than the aviation industry, which is crazy to think about, and it's also involved heavily with slavery and human trafficking and modern other violations of people's human rights. But again, this whole concept of you have to have a new outfit all the time, and you have to dress for the season, and you have to dress for fashion, and you have to do all of this consumption, and the planet literally does not have enough resources. And I think that's something else that we have to change, being like, and I've learned it actually recently coming here, because I haven't had as many clothes because I couldn't bring so many. Yeah. And it's actually really nice to not have to choose between so many different clothes. But I think there's so many things that we need to change, including our attitudes to consumption and what we need.
Difficult.
We can't, obviously we should recycle, but we should also just stop consuming so much stuff.
Yeah, it's difficult, but we can stay talking about that because it's a long topic. And I want to say, Michelle, if you want to talk right now.
Oh, thank you, Mariana. Like Phoebe mentioned earlier, a lot of things have been happening this week, like the Earth Day. And yesterday it was actually Spanish Language Day, UN Spanish Language Day. I don't know what that signifies, but And today I'm going to talk about Lesbian Visibility Week, which started on April 22nd up to April 28th. Now, this week is an annual observance celebrated in the US and UK and other countries. It aims to increase awareness of lesbian women and their issues. It is a week that, at the end of April, that is meant as a time for lesbians to be seen, heard, and celebrated. This is highly because lesbians exist in a somewhat unique intersection of misogyny and homophobia, because their lives and relationships don't revolve around men, outside of living in a patriarchal society, of course. This can make their relationships seem less viable and worthy of respect to others. And this is perfectly displayed, for example, when someone says a variation of words like, well, maybe you just haven't met the right guy yet. Or in my country, it's usually like if someone posts something women on women love related, they're like, oh, period pain will harm for you, or you haven't had period pain yet. And I'm like, even straight people have period pain, so what is the point really of this? But then, it's some of the things that this community faces. And so this week originally began in 1990 and was celebrated up to 1992. However, the week fell off until International Lesbian Visibility Day came to be in 2008. And there were people who argued that a whole week still didn't exist again until 2020. This was when Linda Riley, the publisher of Diva magazine, a major LGBTQ magazine brand in Europe and the UK, believed that only 24 hours of celebration of lesbians was simply insufficient, and she needed to change that. This led to her founding Lesbian Visibility Week with support of several UK and international brands such as GLAAD, Stonewall, UK Black Pride, Mermaids, and other brands. But the main point of Lesbian Visibility Week is to celebrate and support lesbians in your own lives, communities. And how can we do this, you may ask? This can be done by telling them that you care, aiding them in some way that you can, educating yourself on the stigma they may face. And there are also organizations you can donate to, as such as PFLAG, the Trevor Project, and ACLU.
Thank you so much. Yeah, I guess here in Colombia, we don't talk more about the lesbians like this day because a lot of people wait to June and July that celebrate everything.
Yeah.
So I guess it's difficult because it's continue happen that the idea that all the feminists be part of be lesbian. Because there's a lot of people that I be close that saying that like all the feminists be lesbian. I was like, no, you can be feminist and lesbian. You don't need to be lesbian to be feminist and all these things, because that's continue happen. But yeah, obviously trying to respect everyone. But I guess for all the community, but for the woman, I guess it's more difficult in the families trying to say I'm a lesbian. It's difficult because continue the idea that the women need to be a mother, and there's a lot of women that don't be that, and obviously with the gay men continue happen. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I guess it's trying to show more about this day, not just in July and June.
Mm. Yeah, and even like in June for Pride Month, it's often most often see representation for like gay men.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And especially white gay men. You know, we're talking about, like, intersectionalism. Yeah, that's, you know, and I think often, you know, the lesbians get kind of left out of or on the margins of that, you know, conversation and that representation. Because, yeah, we do live in such a patriarchal, male-centered society. So for women that don't depend on a man for protection or for love or for romantic affection or things like that, you know, certainly exist, but easily overlooked, because for women, often our value or our respect is connected to either our father or our husband, as opposed to, you know, yourself first and foremost.
I mean, I can't speak for, because I don't have living experience of being a lesbian, but my flatmate Ruth, like, the stories that she tells me of the misogyny and the sexualization that she faces, she's gay, and if she talks to men about her sexuality, there are some creepy men who
it's like a fetish
trying to talk about women on women action, and for her it's so uncomfortable. And again, it's kind of this like denial of her being a human first of all, but of her also being somebody who is there not for a man's sexual gratification. And that for me is so wild, that we in the 21st century we still have this idea of a woman's sexuality is for men and for men's enjoyment, whereas
even if she has
it's so important that we talk about the unique challenges and joys of the lesbian community as well.
Yeah, it's so important. We hope that happen one day, and everything and everyone was live free and happy. We have run out of time. Thank you so much for every people that listen us today. Thank you, Hannah. Thank you, Phoebe. Thank you, Michelle.
Thank you, Mariana.
Thank you, me. That's true. Enjoy and don't lose the other week we are going to have here, I guess. I'm not sure.
See you next week.
Yeah. Same time, same place.
Yeah. Enjoy. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Ciao.
Quiero que sepas que mi corazón en toda situación te va a querer. Que cuando te miro siento el amor más grande que puede haber en mi ser. Quiero que sepas que quererte a ti me nace de forma muy natural. Que tu existencia es lo mejor que a mí en esta vida me pudo pasar. Y aunque me esté quedando sordo, y aunque me esté quedando ciego, y aunque me esté quedando mudo,
y te puedo ver. Mi vida se llena de luz total. Siento que quiero a los niños y así mido mi gran capacidad de amar. Cuando te beso es tanta la emoción.